On November 28th, Nightline did a show on something called remote viewing, which is a sort of a psychic expression, and it is said to mean, I guess, that you can look through somebody else's eyes and, in essence, spy, as in reading their mind. It seemed an odd, a very odd thing for Nightline to do, actually, in view of the breaking Bosnia story at the time. Norio Hayakawa has sent me a fax about a man named Major Ed Dane, U.S. Army retired. And he helped, apparently, set up the U.S. government's psychic spy operations. And he says that not everything Nightline said was accurate. Not only that, but they barely touched the surface of what really is going on. And here he is. Major Ed Dames. Major, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. You're not on a speakerphone, are you?
I won't be in a moment. How's that?
Oh, much better.
Okay.
Much better. Good. Now, is this roughly accurate? In other words, did you, in essence, help some part of the government help set up the whole operation that is still, I guess, ongoing?
It is no longer extant. I was both the operations officer and the training officer for the unit.
Uh-huh.
It was originally an Army unit. In 1978, it evolved, was passed to DIA in the mid-1980s, and ended up for about 3 or 4 months in under the auspices of CIA, but only a shadow of its former self.
Major, how did you come to be involved, if we might know briefly, to even begin thinking about forming this? Do you yourself have some sort of psychic power, or were you simply in charge of the project to gather together those who allegedly did?
Well, I'm about as psychic as a rock.
I see. Okay.
My job at very high levels of intelligence in the early 1980s, about 1980-81, was to orchestrate the penetration of high value foreign intelligence projects, and to wit, foreign missile delivery systems, nuclear weapon systems, biological and chemical warfare programs, to penetrate those and gather intelligence on them. There were some of those targets that, by hook or by crook, using agents or satellites or special operations units, short of an act of war, I could not answer the mail, so to speak. And so, as a tactic of desperation, I turned to earlier CIA studies and to work that was being done by an operating U.S. Army unit using people, natural psychics. Joe McMonagle, who you might have seen the other night on Nightline, was one of those naturals, to help me solve problems or give me some type of a handle on the problems I was faced with, very intractable problems.
So, Major, you this idea was birthed from your brain then. In other words, you weren't brought in and sat down by some colonel or general and said, well, here is your next assignment, Major. You're going to put this unit together.
That was not my primary job. I put together an effective operating force, but the unit, in fact, in its original primal form, was already operating in the late 1970s using naturals. There was it evolved into something much more powerful later. We can talk about that.
All right. What disinformation was most apparent to you in the Nightline program? In other words, as I said earlier in the introduction, it seemed very odd they did a show on this right in the middle of the Bosnian thing. Very odd. I mean, it popped out of nowhere.
I think it's a really damaged control. There are elements of Congress, certain congressmen who were involved in supporting the project, and the CIA itself, to avoid embarrassment, wanted to do some damage control. I think that was one element. I am not sure about that, about their agenda. What I am sure about are 2 points that were erroneous. Ted Koppel stated that, or attempted to ascertain that the CIA statement spending 11 to 20 million
right
on the program was real. That is not, in fact, correct. Stargate, the remnants of the collection group, the intelligence collection group, that was a research project. The 11 to 20 million that the CIA says it spent was not on operational, that is, an intelligence collection element. It was on research funds, research monies, an attempt to establish the validity of technical remote viewing. That's my term. That's what my company uses. And not on intelligence collection. That's one point. Second point is that Stargate was not the was only the last 6 months to 2 years of the program, and only consisted of three remote viewers that worked for the government. One, who I trained and was an excellent remote viewer. The other two were naturals, and they were simply tarot card readers that the agency found somewhere, and that were essentially the concubines of a couple of congressmen. I'm sorry.
Well, that's quite all right. You say whatever you want. First of all, how effective is remote viewing? A lot of people don't even know what remote viewing is. A lot of the audience doesn't. They probably didn't see Nightline. What is it, and how effective actually is it?
Let me give you some background. The reason that those of us in Army intelligence in the 80s could not use natural psychics was that natural psychics, when they were on target, they were really on, the best of the best. And there were about five or six of them in the United States. But when they were off target, they were really off. And it was that lack of consistency that that disallowed them from being used on operations, in support of operations where deadly force would be used,
sure,
or where life or death situations prevailed.
Sure, but I'm sure you had to crunch numbers, and they demanded numbers. I mean, how else do you prove it? They're right X number percent of the time and wrong some percent.
That was not my job to crunch numbers.
No.
There were two aspects of this program. It's important to distinguish that. Two parallel programs. One was a research side of the house that was out in the open. That's the kind of thing that was being discussed by the Keith Arary and Dale Graff and the other night. But there was another unit that was very, very secret. And that was the unit for which I was operations officer and training officer. We were actually the intelligence collectors. We did not have to be politically correct, that is, to crunch numbers. To validate the existence of the phenomenon in the eyes of the U.S. Army and people who own the project at DOD level, the research had to continue in order to justify the continued expenditure of funds for the operational element of which I led.
What has made you decide to go public about this?
A number of things, not the least of which is that the taxpayers spent a lot of money on the development of this program, and I'll talk about what I mean by that.
Did we waste our money?
No, you did not waste your money. My company is now helping federal authorities find the Unabombers, and we'll be very successful at doing that. That will be proof of the pudding. But that came about from a lot of hard work on the part of U.S. Army officers and a brilliant discovery in 1983 by a man, Ingo Swann, a natural psychic who lives in New York City,
mm-hmm.
who discovered a structured way of how the unconscious mind communicates with conscious awareness, how to tap into collective unconscious, if you will, sort of like an automated database, the same way one would search out a database, how to allow the unconscious mind to do that and communicate to conscious awareness detailed, very accurate information while suppressing imagination, being able to train someone to distinguish between his or her imagination and the data that is associated with a target, a person, a place, a thing, or an event,
mm-hmm.
and how to suppress one's propensity to analyze the data. So we're downloading from collective unconscious raw perceptual information in a very structured way.
And when you say target, you mean a specific individual?
What I mean is a person, information about a person, a place, a thing, an object, or an event. We can reconstruct an event using these techniques. What happened in a place?
And that would be interesting. How does one, if there's a way to explain it, teach somebody with these powers to delineate between their own imagination and what is being remotely viewed? That would be quite a trick.
that was part and parcel of the breakthrough discovery made by Ingo Swann, the person who was a contractor, the natural psychic who was contracted by the U.S. government, the Army in this case. That was part of his discovery at Stanford Research Institute in 1983. He had been there for a number of years and had been the guinea pig of the American Society for Parapsychological Research for many years, and extremely gifted natural psychic who turned his attention on himself and said, how am I doing this? And was able to put together a model for how he himself, as a naturally gifted psychic, was communicating his unconscious to his conscious awareness. When he put together this model, which is a set of protocols, behavioral protocols that I teach and that he taught me, we're able to discriminate, to teach ourselves how to distinguish imagination all the time from what we call the signal, that is the data that's associated with our target.
So
this is a profound discovery.
The signal is just a sort of a part of the overall noise level.
The signal is that little weak voice, if you will, that is associated with the target as opposed to our own background noise, the day-to-day, moment-to-moment conscious noise that we have in our conscious mind.
Is there a way, or you may not want to, and I don't want to push into it, but is there a way to briefly describe to us the methodology you use?
Yes, I'll give you an overview. Without going into the course is a 9-day, very intensive course. And so I'll skip a lot, including lectures.
Okay.
But basically, we acquire a target. We are able to turn our conscious attention and our unconscious mind to the target via a series of stages. It takes about 20 minutes for us to go through, as remote viewers, to go through these stages to a point where we can accurately begin to perceive correctly elements about a target, a person, place, a thing, or an event. These stages, there are six stages. Each one is tantamount to increasingly greater target contact. At first, this is done in the state of high attention. It is not like the old days where we use altered states, laid down in a bed in a dark room.
Right.
And sort of like a stream of consciousness protocol. This is a very structured technique. The remote viewer is sitting at a desk with a ream of white paper in front of him or her and a pen. And using these protocols, they first perceive a target. They're not told what the target is. They're only given a random number. Their unconscious mind is taught to do all the work. They perceive a target first as a gestalt of information, kind of a thought ball, if you will. This is elaborated on the paper in a certain way. The next stage is sensory perceptions, where they elaborate, they download, they objectify in words and sketches the colors, the textures, the smells and tastes, the sounds, the temperatures, and the dimensions that are present at the site. They write those words down, and it's done in an order about 4 seconds. Think of a metronome in front of you, where you're moving very rapidly, writing down these percepts. The next stage, is kinesthetic target contact, where they do some cursory sketching of the target. The next stage, stage 4, is where they begin to make judgments about the data and write down things like people, chairs, meeting, those kinds of things.
Yes.
And we proceed along using these protocols in a very structured manner. We're to the point where we can do accurate, very accurate drawings, distances, directions, vectors of a target. We can do clay models of a person, a place, a facility, those kinds of things, an object. For instance, right now we're modeling for a federal agency the next set of bombs that the Unabomber is making to use against civilians.
Wow.
So that kind of thing. That's what my company, SciTech, is doing now.
In the research at SciTech, or in that government work you did,
mm-hmm.
Was there ever any research into whether the target at any point becomes aware in any way or of any change, discomfort, probing, aware in any way that he or she is a target?
If the target happens to be a natural psychic, somebody that's very gifted, a very gifted natural, and we all have this faculty. It's innate. It just has to be trained to be useful, and there was no structure or grammar, if you will, until the discovery was made. If a trained remote viewer or a natural psychic happens to be the target,
yes,
then sometimes they are aware that they're being targeted. But it's fairly rare. We go in the back door. If our target is a person, Saddam Hussein or Abu Nidal or a terrorist, we go in the back door, so to speak. We can be in their mind, in their dreams, and they will never be consciously aware that they're being targeted.
Major, is it possible to, beyond reading somebody, in essence, or remote viewing?
I don't know what you mean by reading, actually.
Well, intuitively reading through them in the remote viewing process. What I'm asking is it possible to go to beyond that and actually control another mind?
We have never been able to do that. Our Soviet counterparts, the KGB team, known as the extra sensors, that was the Russian term, they attempted those kinds of things, mostly unsuccessfully. They tried to stop hearts by experimenting with frogs, stopping frogs' hearts, and then attempting to move up and up the ante. But they were fairly unsuccessful. We never attempted anything like that, and as far as I know, we wouldn't be able to do it. I would not engage in that kind of thing.
Okay.
It's a passive act. It collects information and downloads it very accurately.
Major, this is just conjecture, but do you think that this ability, apparent innate ability in some, is something that we are coming to in the process of evolution, or something that is long forgotten and simply being resurrected by people like you?
Well, I'm speculating. When I say this, and it's my personal opinion, I think it's a birthright. I think it was forgotten somewhere way back there, centuries, perhaps millennia ago. That's what I believe to be true. It has been a periodic cyclic interest since the mid-1800s. Now I think it's going to stick this time.
Well, the military intelligence people seem to be prepared to say, in essence, we're turning it over to the private sector. I assume they meant people like you. But if this was so effective for the military, I can't imagine the intelligence folks casting it off to the private sector.
Well, I've been involved in a lot of very, very deep, dark, black projects in my career, and I have to say that I have never dealt or been assigned to a unit that has suffered more ostracism,
mm-hmm,
more been looked upon with more fear, more jealousy than that unit that I was assigned to.
I can imagine that.
And it was in the late 70s, it was associated with the occult. That gave it a bad name. And no matter how good we performed, there were others that senior officers, not just Army, senior civilian officials who were scared to death by this. They did not want to hear that it was true. When the head of the Presidential Foreign Intelligence Board, the PIFIAD, was briefed, he went sheet white and said, man should not know these things until he dies. So you can imagine what we were up against.
I really can. Major, stand by. You've got about a 4 or 5 minute break. Stay right there. We'll be back to you. My guest is Major Ed Dames, U.S. Army retired, put together the team, one of the teams, actually was the leader of that program that you saw on Nightline. A lot of inaccuracies there, and we will probe further in a moment. 1-2 Bell. Good morning. My guest is Major Ed Dames, U.S. Army retired, put together a project, actually several projects, that involve remote viewing. It is a fascinating, fascinating topic. He's in the private sector now, and at the moment looking for the Unabomber. We'll ask him about that in a second. What you're listening to right now, of course, is 00. Back now to Major Ed Dames. Major, I assume publicly, having announced that you're looking for the Unabomber, you check your mail carefully.
I have certain built-in controls, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. Are you getting close to the Unabomber?
We've got the principles, yes. They're concentrated in the South Bend, Indiana area, as I have I've mentioned that publicly once, but the details, further details, we have to provide to law enforcement agency.
I understand. Did they come to you, or did you go to them?
The Unabomber or the federal, the agency?
No. You're the agency.
it was a mutual agreement.
Mutual agreement. Where, Major, can this go? In other words, as these abilities continue to develop, where do you think the ceiling might be?
I don't know, Mr. Bell. I really don't know. It would be a world without secrets. What kind of a world that would be, I think it might be a better world, but I can only speculate, as can you. It's a profound tool.
I understand why it scares people. I don't want somebody in my mind.
I understand that. It would be a brave new world. I civilianized this to use it against there's practical solutions outside of law enforcement too. We can look at the causes of illnesses and the treatments, those kinds of things. Lots of science applications, things that we used it for in the military, as a matter of fact. Where it's going, sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit. Here's a fact. Ask your guest, Art, comment on the suspicious circumstances surrounding the death of Ingo Swann and others who were involved in the original projects.
Ingo Swann is alive and kicking as of this morning.
Well, then I don't know where he got this. Were there any killed in the early projects?
There were. There was one death, but it was a heart attack. One of the remote viewers, a person using an altered state, had a weak heart and killed over in an operation. That was the only death that the project could record.
All right. From Variety magazine, there was a soldier featured recently who had been shot in the head. Do you know about this man? Apparently shot in the head and developed psychic abilities after that, worked on Saddam Hussein for a while. Then, in fact, he was used against Saddam Hussein, they said, during the Gulf War. And his conscience began to bother him. Do you know anything about this?
That soldier was my former vice president, and he fabricated the complete story. He was shot in the head in Jordan on a training exercise. He was the safety officer for a gunnery practice, and he stood up in front of his men, and he was shot in the helmet. His Kevlar helmet tripped around, and he had a headache for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's the extent of that. I have fired him. He was dishonorably discharged from the U.S. Army, less than honorable discharge in lieu of a court-martial, and I can't have people like that associated with SciTech.
So you've got to be very careful, don't you? And I assume you go through a tremendous screening process in trying to determine. How do you, by the way, determine if somebody is genuine? If I came to you and I said, look, I can read minds. I can see what others are doing. I already have that ability. How would you test me?
I don't test you. I interview you. I can train anyone. What I'm looking for is someone who is going to use the skills, because I am not going to invest 9 long, hard days of my time in someone who's not going to take this back and use it. And their respective discipline, whether that's medicine, we train doctors, scientists, musicians, you name it, who we want to go back and use this in their profession to solve their own problems and to bootstrap their own disciplines. Some of them have written books. If you were to come to me as a natural psychic with that kind of a talent, I would first be leery that you had a big ego. If your ego was such that you've been told how good you were for many years, I'm going to need to break that down, because you have to start from square one with me. Mm-hmm. Think of if I were an NBA scout and I saw some kid in the inner city who could run rings around his peers with a basketball.
Yes.
If that kid was prepared to come with me and start from square one in a training camp, I know I can make an all-star out of him. But if he's not, then I can't do anything with that.
Of the two possibilities, would you rather train the untrained and those who have a sort of latent ability that you can bring out, or would you rather have somebody already with a great power in this area come to you?
I've been training since 1983, and I think it's split down the middle, 50-50. About half of the people I have trained who have become all-stars rather than just near professionals said they had no psychic ability to speak of. And it turns out that they did and didn't know it, and they were superb. The other half were people who had natural psychic ability and knew it, but were willing to toe the line and submit to the training protocols, which are rigorous.
Is there a physical, psychological price somebody pays for doing this work?
I think only that it changes the way you look at the world, and that does have certain ramifications. It does not empower you, but when you reach a point in training where you can stick your head metaphorically up above the cloud and see where you've been, where you're going, and your relationship to everything else around you for the first time, that is a fairly life-changing event. So, yes, that and with regard to that, it does.
All right. There's two sides to every story, and here's another side. Suppose I take your course. I become an all-star, and I decide that I'm going to, target the head of Disney or ABC. And I'm going to do this because I think there might be something going on. And I find out there's going to be a merger. And so I buy the right stock, and I start making a lot of money with this power. Is that an improper use of the power?
I prefer to call it a skill than a power.
All right, a skill.
I can't be the judge of that, Mr. Bell. What I'm doing is training people to use this. Generally speaking, the more one uses it, the more, for some strange reason, the more ethical one becomes. It has a spiritualizing quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but it does. But yes, you could do that. It takes a lot of work to do that, and it would take you a number of days to pull in the right amount of information. But yes, you would be able to do that.
All right. Would several people with this skill be more powerful than one?
The way that we employ our company is the same way that we used it in the military mission mode. We have 6 to 8 remote viewers working on important projects. That's the only way that we can guarantee, and we're the first in history to guarantee that psychically produced data will be dead on a project. That's the only way we can achieve that degree of confidence factor.
Okay, so it's not a matter of additional power. It's a matter of a cooperation. So
mutually corroborating data. We have built-in controls. Half the viewing team has absolutely no idea what the target is. Some have just a modicum of target information.
So you've got a control group.
We have a control group, yes.
How did you proceed from the military side of this to the privatized side of this? You've got a company. It does this kind of work. What kind of clients, other than law enforcement, looking for the Unabomber, that sort of thing, what might typically be a client of yours?
A lot of science, research and development types of companies who are interested in solutions to technical problems, or perhaps a new drug, vaccines, those kinds of things.
AIDS research?
Yeah, some AIDS research. We actually had almost landed a project to look at the origin of AIDS. Now we have to be careful when we do something like this too. AIDS is both a disease and a virus. So when you're searching the collective unconscious the way that we do it in a very rigorous, systematic manner, if we are looking for the origin of the AIDS virus, we can go back 10,000, 40,000 years, where it appeared to be a canine virus that jumped ship and became simian, or monkey-born.
Hmm.
But if we just target the topical idea of AIDS, then we see a couple decades ago, it's beginnings as a pandemic. So we have to be very careful about what we call queuing, those search terms.
All right, you keep using the term collective unconscious. Now, delineate that kind of work with a specific target. How do you collect information from the collective, and by that I assume you mean the world's unconscious.
The global mind.
The global mind. All right, there you are.
Yeah. Using the protocols that we use, we turn our conscious attention to a target. Our unconscious attention follows. It's our unconscious attention is already immersed in this global mind. It's already there. It doesn't go anywhere. It simply turns and looks in a direction. Look, I'm using that term loosely. It focuses upon that specific area that we're interested in.
I don't suppose you coined the phrase "think globally."
No, not me.
All right, I have had on my program and will have on tomorrow night somebody who claims great psychic powers and has documented them to a great degree, Gordon Michael Scallion.
I've heard of him.
You know the name?
Yes.
He has predicted accurately weather cycles, volcanic action earlier in the year, and in March, a series of earthquakes that he now believes may be culminating in a very, very large series of earthquakes soon. In your probing of the collective consciousness, do you run into anything like this?
Yes, sir, we do.
Can you tell me anything about what you found?
Or will, in a general fashion, yes. In a general way, it appears that over the years, we've looked at these just as an experiment, as a military team, and compiled results. We perceived massive global weather changes that preclude growing crops. The vicissitudes of these weather changes will preclude growing crops the way we normally do. Will no longer be, in North America at least, the crops will have to be grown in habitats that are controlled. A tremendous problem with epidemics and pandemics, diseases in third world countries, particularly because ozone, it appears that ozone, the ozone problem, is increasing the mutation rate, stressing the Earth's immune system, if you will, and causing microorganisms to mutate much faster than vaccines can be made to keep up with them, causing a lot of deaths. We're perceiving a bovine AIDS that kills a lot of babies. It's transmitted by somatotropic growth hormone, the Dairymen's Association. It's a needle that they use to inject this growth hormone to increase milk production.
Yes.
That also will transmit this bovine AIDS that will not affect adults as much as infants who lack the immune system to handle it. And actually the situation gets grimmer after that.
Grimmer. All right. I am not as sensitive any more than anybody else, but I watch the news. I've done this show, you know, news-oriented program, for 11 years now, this particular program. So every day I do homework and I watch the news. And I have come to coin or use a word called the quickening. I call it that, whether it's economic, political, social. In every single area of human endeavor, events appear to be accelerating toward I don't know what, but I can just feel it, and so I've called it the quickening, and it kind of gone on. Do you feel what I feel? To me, it's just the hair stands up on the back of my neck, the other shoe about to fall kind of feeling, the acceleration of events. Is there anything to that?
I think we're in for a lot of character-building opportunities as corporately, world body. One of my best remote viewers, I took the best and the brightest from the military team and employed them in my company. One of them is still on active duty with the Defense Intelligence Agency. He has an explanation. Well, actually, he has a good description of what he and those of us on the team feel is happening. The Wankel engine, as you know, it needs a governor on it. It's a rotary engine.
Yeah, oh yes, I have one.
It needs a governor because it starts to accelerate out of control.
Right.
And it explodes.
Right.
And he feels that the Earth, that the globe is in that sort of a modality now. It's accelerating out of control without the governor, and then it's going to go bam. So I tend to agree with that.
Most psychics, when you talk to them, will say, here is my prophecy, but it does not have to be. In other words, a change in human behavior will produce a change in the thread of time in the future. Do you subscribe to that?
Many of my students who are scientists and doctors do ascribe to that. I'm more pessimistic by nature, having been a soldier for many years. I don't think we're going to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. I think that it's a finger in the dike approach to many things, including ozone problem. So I disagree. I think the situation is going to get grim and that we will not, in fact, rise to the occasion.
All right. As you look into the collective unconscious, I too share that half-empty glass of water view with you, by the way. But I'm not sure what lies upon the other side. I simply know that, like the airplane halfway across the Pacific in the old days, the little red light saying point of no return, that's already on for humanity. We are going to go on to whatever is next. I just don't know what is next. Maybe you do.
I really don't think that this is necessarily the forum to discuss that. It involves things that we perceive in the out years, and they're fairly esoteric, and I don't want to really, as president of SciTech, talk about those things now, because they are sort of off the wall, let's say.
Off the wall?
Yeah. But there's something out there that's very exciting. However, we'll pay a heavy price as a world community to get there. Like I say, a lot of character building opportunities will be out there for our children and our grandchildren.
Well, it's nice to know that we'll have grandchildren anyway.
Some of us will, yes.
Regarding actual physical Earth changes, geographic major Earth changes, are they coming?
They are.
That was a yes?
That was a yes.
Look, you've been really kind to come on the air with me this morning. You did it on very short notice. I want to give you an opportunity to plug your company. You want to plug it in some way?
Oh, I think that our success on the Unabomber project will probably do that for us, although I thank you for the opportunity. I have a training program where there are very few select people a year are accepted into our Beverly Hills training office for 9 days, an intensive one-on-one. There's only one student per course, and we teach these skills to those students. If there are any of your listeners who think that they might want to do that, they can communicate with me. On, do you want to give you the address of the company?
Well, either that or a phone number. Or both.
Yeah, I'll give you the address of the company. It's SciTech, that's P-S-I-T-E-C-H, two words.
Right.
P.O. Box 3762, Beverly Hills, California, 90212. And if you're the Unabomber, we'll know that you're mailing something to us. So.
Give the address one more time, please.
SciTech, P.O. Box 3762, Beverly Hills, California, 90212.
Okay, and so they could write you a letter, and they could in essence apply.
Yes.
If they wanted to. All right. Well, Major, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. I appreciate your clearing up an awful lot of things that I didn't understand about the kind of work that you do.
Yeah, I think the point where the researchers experiencing only 15% to 20% accuracy. Those are untrained people in a laboratory environment. My corporate team has 80% to 90% accuracy at the end of 3 days.
80% to 90% after 3 days?
That's right. That's how effective, that's what your tax dollars paid for, that degree of effectiveness. As professional officers, we would not have stuck with something that was ineffective for that many years. This thing really worked.
Well, in a way, though, what you're doing makes what Orwell predicted and wrote about pale by comparison. I wonder what kind of world Major Dame's world would be. It'd be a different place, that's for certain. Major, I want to thank you again. Thank you for being here. You take care. There you have it, everybody. That's Major Ed Dames of SciTech. He took it from the military. into the private sector. And remember, Mr. Unabomber, he's checking his mail. We'll be back. This is CBC.